I followed a few steps behind him. He knew the way.
"Welcome back, Marcus," the dentist called from the exam room. "Nice haircut."
The fourth grader was in the big chair, spitting into the little white sink. The other two kids were all stickered up and waiting to go back to class. Marcus sat down heavily and opened his book, which was called Concepts in Mathematics. Mr. Tompkin acted like everyone in our class was part of one big happy math group, but it didn't take much to figure out there was a system. Red math books for genius kids like Jay Stringer, orange ones for kids like me who did okay, and yellow ones for kids who left the room twice a week to meet with Ms. Dudley, who did math support. Marcus's book was different, thick, with a hardcover and small type. So I guess that even though it was blue, even farther down the rainbow than yellow, it was at least the equivalent of a red.
"You like math, huh?" I said.
He looked up, and I got the strong feeling he didn't know he had ever seen me before, that he didn't remember punching Sal or talking to me about the sun.
"Yeah," he said slowly, like I might be stupid or something. "I like math."
And he went back to reading. I delivered the two waiting kids back to their classes. One of them was holding a shiny paper card shaped like an apple that said she needed a follow-up visit. There was a line for her mom to sign. Cavity, I thought grimly. When I got back to the dentist's office, the fourth grader was still in the chair and Marcus was still reading his math book. That was fine with me. I grabbed my book from the table where I'd left it and settled back to read.
"Some people think it's possible, you know," Marcus mumbled.
"What?"
He pointed at my book. "Time travel. Some people think it's possible. Except those ladies lied at the beginning of the book."
"What?"
"Those ladies in the book. Mrs. What, Mrs. Where, and Mrs. Who."
"Mrs. What's it, Mrs. Who, and Mrs. Which," I corrected him.
He shrugged.
"What do you mean they lied? They never lied."
I was getting annoyed. The truth is that I hate to think about other people reading my book.
It's like watching someone go through the box of private stuff that I keep under my bed.
"Don't you remember?" He leaned forward in his chair. "They're traveling through time, right? All over the universe, right? And they promise that girl that they'll have her back home 5 minutes before she left. But they don't."
"How do you know they don't have her home 5 minutes before she left?"
"I mean, there's no clock or anything. They leave at night and they get back the same night. Maybe they left at 8:30 and got home at 8:25. He laughed. "You don't need a clock. Think. At the beginning of the book, that girl walks through the vegetable garden.
Meg?"
"Huh?"
"You keep saying that girl. Her name is Meg."
"So she walks to the far side of the vegetable garden and sits on the stone wall, right? So she can see the garden from where she's sitting and talking with that boy, right? And then those ladies show up and take them away.
His name is Calvin.
And so what if they can see the garden?" "So the garden is where they appear when they get back home at the end of the book, remember? They land in the broccoli. So if they had gotten home 5 minutes before they left, like those ladies promised they would, then they would have seen themselves get back before they left."
I put my book down and shook my head. "Think about it. They hadn't even left yet. How could they have gotten back already? They didn't even know for sure whether they would get back."
"It doesn't matter whether they knew it. That's got nothing to do with it."
He leaned back and shoved his hands in his pockets. "If they land in the broccoli at 8:25, they should be in the broccoli at 8:25. Period."
"That makes no sense," I said. "What if they couldn't do it? Save Meg's father and get back in one piece?"
"Then they wouldn't have landed in the broccoli at all."
"But they did do it, right?"
"Yes, but the end can't happen before the middle."
He smiled.
"Why can't it?"
"I don't know. It's common sense."
"Common sense? Have you read Relativity? You know, by Einstein?"
I glared at him. Einstein says common sense is just a habit of thought. It's how we're used to thinking about things. But a lot of the time, it just gets in the way.
In the way of what?
In the way of what's true. I mean, it used to be common sense that the world was flat and the sun revolved around it. But at some point, someone had to reject that assumption, or at least question it.
Well, obviously somebody did.
Well, duh, Copernicus did. Look, all I'm saying is that at the end of the book, they don't get back 5 minutes before they left. Or they would have seen themselves get back before they left.
I gave up.
It was dark in the garden, I said. Maybe they just couldn't see themselves from where they were sitting.
I thought of that, he said, but they would have heard all the yelling and the dog.
My God, what does it matter? It's a story. Someone made it up. You do realize that, don't you?
He shrugged. The story is made up, but time travel is possible. In theory.
I've read some articles about it.
Wow, you really do like math, don't you?
He smiled again. With his super short hair, his head looked like a perfectly round ball when he smiled.
This is more like physics.
Fine. You really like physics, don't you?
Yeah.
He picked up my book from the table and flipped through it.
Actually, I had almost the same conversation with my teacher right after I read this.
She didn't understand me at first either.
She?
Mr. Anderson is a he. You really don't notice much about people, do you?
Not Mr. Anderson. This was in second grade. I wrote a book report about it.
In second grade?
He put the book down.
Yeah, back in Detroit, where we used to live till last year.
But I don't talk about this kind of stuff anymore, usually.
Why not?
He shot me a look. People don't want to think about it.
I can see why, I said. It makes my head hurt.
Still, you did better than most people. You're a pretty smart kid.
I rolled my eyes.
Gee, thanks. Okay, Marcus, the dentist chirped from the other room. You're up.
I watched Marcus slip into the big chair and begin to read his math book again, holding it up with one hand while the dentist worked from the other side. The fourth grader waited for me by the door with a sticker on.
Miranda, you can go on back to your class, the dentist called. Marcus is going to be here a while. He can walk himself upstairs when we're through.
So I picked up my book and hiked back up the stairs with the fourth grader. As we started down the hallway to his classroom, he stopped, and I waited while he peeled the sticker off his shirt, folded it, and stuck it in his pocket. Things That Smell. For a long time, Colin was just the short kid who seemed to end up in my class every year. In third grade, he and I spent about a week convincing Alice Evans that velour was a kind of animal fur, and she refused to wear it for the rest of the year. But aside from that, we had never hung out together. I'd seen him with his skateboard in the park a few times, and he'd always let me have a turn on it, but that was all. And then suddenly he was everywhere. He came downstairs with me and Anne-Marie at lunch, or yelled, "Hold up!" and walked to Broadway with us after school to get drinks at Jimmy's sandwich shop. It was Colin who had the idea to ask Jimmy for a job. I'm pretty sure he was kidding. Colin was always saying weird stuff to people that made you partly proud to know him, and partly wish you weren't standing next to him. Attention-seeking is what Mom would call him. "Hey," Colin said to Jimmy after school one day in the beginning of November, when we were paying for our Cokes. "You're always alone in here. How about talking to the owner about giving us jobs?"
"I'm the owner," Jimmy said.
"And who's us?"
It was me, Anne-Marie, and Colin standing there.
"Us," Colin said. "We could work after school."
Jimmy grabbed a pickle chunk out of the setup tray, which I didn't know the name of yet, and tossed it into his mouth.
"I don't need help that late. What about when I open up?"
"We have lunch at 10:45, Colin said, a stupidly early lunch,
At our school, the older you get, the stupider your lunch period.
Jimmy nodded.
Yeah, that works.
I didn't think Jimmy was serious, but Colin said we should show up at lunchtime the next day, just in case. And it turned out he was serious. The three of us worked during lunch for the rest of that week. We washed a lot of greasy plastic trays, weighed piles of sliced meat, which is as gross as it sounds, stacked up sodas in the refrigerated case, cut tomatoes, and did whatever else Jimmy said to do. I guess it's obvious that Jimmy was kind of weird, because no normal person would have given 40-minute-a-day jobs to 3 sixth-graders. On our first day, Jimmy spent about 5 entire minutes pointing to a plastic bank shaped like Fred Flintstone that he had up on a shelf in the back room. "Never touch the bank," he said. "Never." When I pointed Jimmy's weirdness out to Anne-Marie, she said, "Yeah, but he's nice weird, not creepy weird."
"You think?" I said. "What about the creepy cartoon bank?"
She shrugged. "My dad collects stuff like that, too. Lots of people do." It turned out that Jimmy didn't intend to pay us any money. Instead, he let us each pick a soda from the refrigerator and make a sandwich from the stuff in the setup tray on the counter. The setup tray was just lettuce, tomato, onions, American cheese, Swiss cheese, and pickles. The other food, sliced turkey, ham, roast beef, and salami, a big tub of tuna salad, and meatballs in a plug-in pot, was off-limits. Every day we took our cheese sandwiches back to school and ate them at our desks during silent reading period. I sat next to Alice Evans, who never complained about anything, and Anne-Marie sat next to Jay Stringer, who was oblivious to the world when he was reading. But Colin sat next to Julia.
"Mr. Tompkin,"
Julia said on the Friday of our first week at Jimmy's, "Colin is eating his lunch at his desk again, and I despise the smell of pickles." Mr. Tompkin looked up over the top of his book, adjusted his toothpick, and said,
"Try breathing through your mouth."
Things You Don't Forget. Our apartment door was unlocked when I got home from school that Friday, which was strange. More than strange, actually. It had never happened before. But I figured Mom had probably just forgotten to lock it when she left for work that morning. It sounds stupid now that I say it, but that's what I thought. Once I was inside, though, I had this sudden fear that I wasn't alone in the apartment. I dropped my knapsack in the hall and ran down to Sal's. He came to the door, but opened it just enough to squeeze his body into the crack. "My door was unlocked," I said. "Doesn't that seem weird?"
"Yeah," he said. "Maybe you forgot to lock it."
He stayed there, wedged into the doorway, definitely not inviting me in.
"Yeah, probably."
I could hear the television behind him, blaring a commercial.
"Okay."
He looked up at the ceiling behind me. I felt like an idiot.
"Okay. See you later."
I went back upstairs, made myself a bowl of Cheerios with an inch of sugar on top, and turned on the television. Mom walked in around 6.
"You forgot to lock the door this morning," I said.
"What? No, I didn't."
"Well, it wasn't locked when I got home today."
"It wasn't?" She started walking from room to room, opening drawers and closet doors, and I followed her.
"It can't be," she said. "I would never forget to lock the door."
Nothing seemed out of place. She got to the kitchen and stopped. "I guess I don't specifically remember locking it, but I know I would never not lock it." She filled the spaghetti pot with water, and we talked about other stuff while she set the table and I peeled some carrots. But every once in a while she would interrupt herself to say, "How could I have forgotten to lock the door?" We were halfway through dinner when she suddenly stood up and walked out of the apartment.
"Mom?"
I found her standing in the stairwell, peering into the nozzle of the fire hose.
"I knew it," she said.
"I would never forget to lock the door. Never."
The key was gone.
We searched every room all over again, but couldn't find a single thing missing.
It makes no sense, Mom said, standing over her jewelry box and staring down at the gold bracelets that had belonged to her mother. Why steal the key, unlock the door, and not take anything?
That was Friday afternoon. I found your first note Monday morning.
The first note. Your first note was written in tiny words on a little square of stiff paper that felt like it had once gotten wet. I was packing my knapsack for school when I noticed it sticking out of my library book, which was about a village of squirrels, or maybe it was mice. I had not bothered to read it.
M. This is hard, harder than I expected, even with your help. But I have been practicing, and my preparations go well. I'm coming to save your friend's life, and my own. I ask two favors. First, you must write me a letter. Second, please remember to mention the location of your house key. The trip is a difficult one. I will not be myself when I reach you. I was freaked. Mom was freaked. She took the morning off and had the locks changed, even though she said that M could be anyone, that this had nothing to do with our missing key, and that the note could have been stuck in that book by anyone, years ago probably, and we'd never know why.
Isn't it weird, though? I said. Our key was just stolen on Friday, and now on Monday we find a note asking where our key is?
It is weird, Mom said.
She put her hands on her hips.
But if you think about it, one thing really can't have anything to do with the other. Someone with the key wouldn't have to ask where the key is. It makes no sense.
She was right, of course. It was backward. But somewhere in my head, a tiny bell started ringing. I didn't even notice it at first.
Things on a slant.
Our second week, Jimmy said we could start serving customers.
But first you have to learn the V-cut, he told us. Very important. Except he said, very important, stretched his eyelids back with two fingers, and bowed down low. It was the classic fake Chinese act. I had never seen a grown-up do it before. If Mom had been there, she would have whacked him on the head with a plastic tray.
The V-what? Colin said.
The V-cut was Jimmy's special way of cutting the sandwich rolls.
Always a 45-degree angle, he said.
He was very serious about it, sawing down one side of the roll and then carefully sliding the knife out and inserting it in the other side. The top of the bread was supposed to lift off in a perfect V, which was why Jimmy called it a V-cut. He gave us each a roll and watched while we tried it. Anne-Marie's was perfect. Colin's was passable. Mine was a disaster. When I lifted the top off, flaps of bread guts were hanging down, and Jimmy said it looked unappealing.
You can use that for your own sandwich, he said, making a face at my shredded roll. Try again tomorrow.
So Anne-Marie and Colin got to put on aprons, stand behind the counter, and help customers while I counted the bread order in the back and went to the A&P for napkins. Anne-Marie said later that Jimmy should talk, that he looked unappealing in his stretched-out white T-shirt with yellow underarm stains. That made me feel a little better, but not much. As soon as Colin got his apron on, Jimmy started calling him Lady.
Hey, Lady, get some more mayo on there. Hey, lady, pass me those trays.
Colin just laughed, which is how Colin is. Every day that week, I cut my roll as soon as I got to the store, and every day Jimmy shook his head no. Colin and Anne-Marie worked together behind the counter. Jimmy had started calling them the counter couple and making disgusting kissing noises at them when he walked by, which made Anne-Marie turn red, while Colin just smiled like a goofball. Jimmy said that while I practiced my V-cut, I could be in charge of hot chocolate. He used those Swiss Miss instant hot chocolate packets where you just add water. But no one ever ordered it.
and I don't think he really even looked at my rolls after the first couple of days. Anyway, they were only getting worse.
White things. The first time I brought Anne-Marie home to our apartment after school, I wished for two things. First, I wished that the boys wouldn't be in front of the garage. They just recently started saying things to me, different things, some of which included the words sweet and baby. Mom said this happened to girls after a certain age, and that what the boys wanted was a reaction, any kind of reaction.
Don't laugh. Don't call them jerks. Don't take off running, she said. Do nothing. Act as if they're invisible.
My second wish was that the laughing man would be gone, or asleep, or at least distracted by someone or something else when we walked by. We got to Broadway. "Want to stop for a soda?" I said. Anne-Marie shrugged. "No, thanks." We started toward Amsterdam. I tried to follow Anne-Marie's conversation, but mostly just squinted to see down the block. By some miracle, the boys weren't out in front of the garage. I offered up a silent thank you to the universe, and then we started across the street to my corner.
"Angel!" the laughing man called out. He was looking right at Anne-Marie, and I couldn't help thinking that, depending on your idea of heaven, Anne-Marie might appear to be something like an angel. Her coat was pure white and went all the way down to her toes, even though it was only the middle of November, and really not all that cold. How her dad kept that coat so clean is still a mystery to me.
"Angel!"
I laughed. I was trying to show Anne-Marie how absolutely downright funny it was to have a weird homeless guy here on my corner. My very own weird homeless guy.
"Ha! Angel!" I said. "That's a new one."
"Angel!"
he called out again. And now he was pointing at her.
"Is he pointing at me?" Anne-Marie asked, slowing down.
"No," I said, steering her as far from the laughing man as I could without pushing her into crosstown traffic.
Upstairs, a weird thing happened. After living there almost every day of my life, I saw our apartment as if it were the first time. I noticed all sorts of things that were usually invisible to me. The stuffing coming out of the sofa in two places, the burns from Mr. Noonsy's cigarettes, the big flakes of paint hanging off the ceiling, and the black spot next to the radiator where dripping water had stained the wood floor.
"Excuse me," I said. "I'll be right back."
In the bathroom, I stared at the white tile hexagons on the floor and saw nothing but the crud in between them.
I hid Mom's 20-year-old jar of Vaseline in the medicine cabinet that's been painted so many times it won't close anymore.
"I like your room,"
Anne-Marie called to me when I came out of the bathroom. I turned slowly and looked into my room, wondering what horror I would see in it. But it actually looked okay. No curtains or carpeting, but normal stuff. A normal room with a friend sitting on the bed, which had just one pillow. I stepped in and closed the door behind me. When Mom got home, we walked Anne-Marie back to her building. Luckily, the laughing man was under his mailbox by that time. I wanted Mom to be surprised when Anne-Marie's doorman called me Miss Miranda, but she just smiled at him. I could tell that Anne-Marie's dad was charmed by Mom. People always like her. He offered us some kind of powdered sugar dough balls he had in the kitchen, and Mom ate two of them while I said no thank you, that I hadn't had my dinner yet, which made Mom laugh and cough up powdered sugar, which made Anne-Marie's dad laugh. I looked at the sugar on the front of her T-shirt and thought that if she had the slightest idea what she looked like, she wouldn't be laughing at all.
The second note. The sandwich rolls are delivered to Jimmy's store early in the morning, before he gets there. I still see the tall paper bag leaning against his locked door on my way to school every day. I haven't put one foot inside Jimmy's place since December, but I look for that bag out of habit, and when I see it, I always think I can smell the bread inside, which I know is just a memory. Last November, I counted Jimmy's bread delivery at lunch every day,
pulling the rolls out by twos and dropping them into the previous day's empty bag as I went. I remember finding your second note about halfway down on a Monday. Same weird tiny handwriting, same crispy paper, but this one started with my name. Miranda, your letter must tell a story, a true story. You cannot begin now, as most of it has not yet taken place, and even afterward there is no hurry. But do not wait so long that your memory fades. I require as much detail as you can provide. The trip is a difficult one, and I must ask my favors while my mind is sound. A postscript. I know you have shared my first note. I ask you not to share the others. Please, I do not ask this for myself. I read the note over and over, but I have to tell you that I had no idea what any of it meant until later. And I have to tell you something else, too. I was scared. You scared the hell out of me.
You counting those rolls or memorizing them?
Jimmy was behind the counter, running a hunk of ham back and forth in the electric slicer really fast, the way he liked to. I stuffed the note in my pocket and started counting bread again, but I'd lost my place and I had to start all over. A few minutes later, a delivery truck pulled up in front of the store and Jimmy went out to talk to the driver.
Hey,
Colin said as soon as the door had closed behind Jimmy. Let's find out what's in the Fred Flintstone bank.
No way, Anne-Marie said. You're crazy.
You're the lookout, I told her, following Colin into the back room. He had the bank in his hands already. He shook it, but it made almost no noise.
You guys, Anne-Marie said, don't.
We're just looking at it, I called back.
Hurry,
I said to Colin. He was trying to get the rubber stopper out of the bottom of the bank.
Let me try, I whispered.
No, he said, I've got it. And the stopper was in his hand. We bumped foreheads trying to see into the hole at the same time, and then left our heads pressed together, which was something I hadn't expected to do. I couldn't quite see Colin's face from this perspective, but I felt him smile.
Cool, he said. It's full of $2 bills.
He was right. The bank was practically stuffed with $2 bills, folded into little triangle shapes, with the twos showing on the sides.
You guys, he's coming!
Anne-Marie sounded panicked. We pulled our heads apart, and Colin shoved the rubber stopper back in. I was out front by the time Jimmy held the door open for the delivery guy, who had a stack of sodas loaded onto a hand truck.
Hey, lady, Jimmy called. I need you. This is man's work.
Sorry,
Colin came strolling out of the back in his apron. Bathroom break. Anne-Marie smiled at me while Colin and Jimmy were busy loading the soda into the big refrigerated case by the door.
You're nuts, she said. You know that, right?
I could still feel the spot where Colin's head had pressed up against mine.
I know. It was kind of stupid.
We walked back to school with Colin between us. He was zigzagging and bumping his shoulders against ours, saying, boing, 5 points, boing, 10 points, while we both laughed like idiots.
Things you push away.
Ready? Richard asked Mom.
We are practicing even more now. He sits in a chair opposite her. I'm the timekeeper. Mom closes her eyes, and I know that she is lifting a corner of her veil. She nods, and we begin. Mom says each of us has a veil between ourselves and the rest of the world, like a bride wears on her wedding day, except this kind of veil is invisible. We walk around happily with these invisible veils hanging down over our faces. The world is kind of blurry, and we like it that way. But sometimes our veils are pushed away for a few moments, like there's a wind blowing it from our faces. And when the veil lifts, we can see the world as it really is, just for those few seconds before it settles down again. We see all the beauty and cruelty and sadness and love. But mostly we are happy not to. Some people learn to lift the veil themselves. Then they don't have to depend on the wind anymore.
She doesn't mean that it's a real veil. And it isn't about magic or some idea that maybe God is looking right at you or that an angel is sitting next to you or anything like that. Mom doesn't think in those ways. It's just her way of saying that most of the time people get distracted by little stuff and ignore the big stuff. To play in the winner's circle, Mom has to get herself in a certain frame of mind. She says it's sort of like lifting one little corner of her veil, enough to see more than usual, but not so much that she gets totally distracted by life, death, and the beauty of it all. She has to open her mind, she says, so that when the clues start coming, she can see the thread that joins them. Of course, if her celebrity is as dumb as a bag of hair, it's hopeless. I've thought a lot about those veils. I wonder if, every once in a while, someone is born without one. Someone who sees the big stuff all the time. Like maybe you. Things You Count. Right before Thanksgiving, Colin and Anne-Marie were behind the counter weighing a slimy heap of sliced turkey into quarter-pound piles separated by pieces of waxed paper. Jimmy said they should do a whole week's worth. "Won't it go bad?" Anne-Marie asked. "Nah, stuff's full of preservatives." Colin licked his lips and said, "Yum, yum, chemical turkey." "Shut it," Jimmy said. For once, I was happy to be counting the rolls. Now that he had us, Jimmy seemed to have nothing to do. He sat on one of the stools, bolted to the floor in front of the big front window, and watched me with his arms crossed over his chest, his hands tucked under his yellow-stained armpits. He had already rejected my V-cut for the day. It was waiting for me on a tray behind Anne-Marie, getting dry as usual. Luckily, Jimmy didn't limit our use of mayonnaise. "Looky," Jimmy said, pointing his chin toward the window. "There goes one of your little friends." On the other side of the street, Julia was walking alone, wearing her orange suede knapsack and an orange suede headband that matched. Matching suede knapsacks and headbands were probably all the rage in Switzerland, I thought. "You mean Swiss Miss?" I grabbed two rolls and dropped them into the bag at my feet. "She's not my friend, not even close." He smiled slowly. "Swiss Miss, that's a good one." He stared outside for another minute, then stood up. "You're funny, you know that?" I shrugged, still counting, but happy. A compliment from Jimmy was a rare thing. When I finished, I folded the top of the bag and lugged it to its spot behind the counter. Jimmy had disappeared into the back. Anne-Marie was giggling at something Colin had said. Ever since our foreheads had touched, looking at Colin made me feel strange. But good strange, not creepy strange. 80, I called out to Jimmy, right on the nose. "Better luck next time," he yelled back. Colin looked at me and grinned, causing my stomach to sort of float inside my body. "He's dying for the bread order to come up short, you know." "You should throw a roll in the trash one day, just to make him happy." "Don't listen to him, Miranda," Anne-Marie said. "He's just trying to get you in trouble again." But while she was talking to me, she was looking at Colin, and her expression was funny, as if her stomach might be floating too. Messy things. Anne-Marie and I stopped in the fourth floor bathroom before going back to class after lunch. She said she wanted to wash her hands again after all that turkey. "Today was fun," she said, looking at herself in the mirror and combing her hair with her fingers. "I wish we got more than 40 minutes for lunch." "I hate counting bread," I said. "It's boring." She laughed. "At least your hands don't smell like chemical turkey." "At least you get to goof around behind the counter with Colin," I thought. "I'm always running to the store, cleaning up some gunk, or stuck talking to Mr. Yellowstains." "Let's go," I said. "I'm starving." Julia was standing right outside our classroom, almost as if she was waiting for us. "Oh, no!" She sighed deeply and pointed at Anne-Marie's arm. "Oh, Anne-Marie! Your turquoise sweater. It's your favorite. Poor you. And Mom thought I was dramatic.
Anne-Marie looked down at the hem of her sweater, which had some mustard on it. I had no idea it was her favorite.
It'll come out, Anne-Marie said. My dad will get it out.
Julia leaned against the wall and adjusted her headband.
What I don't understand is why you're working at all. It's not like you need the money.
Here she stopped to glance at me.
And no offense, but that place is kind of disgusting. I saw a roach there once.
I like it there, Anne-Marie said. It's actually pretty fun.
That guy who works there is gross.
He's not gross, I said, and he doesn't, I made air quotes, work there. He owns the store.
We don't get paid, Anne-Marie said softly. It's just the sandwiches.
And sodas, I said, waving my Sprite.
Right, Julia said, talking just to Anne-Marie, as if I didn't exist.
Like you're supposed to be eating sandwiches and drinking soda.
Anne-Marie's face folded up a little.
It's fine.
Fine, Julia said. Forget it.
Mr. Tompkin came to the door.
Why aren't you three inside? Silent reading period started 5 minutes ago.
As we walked in behind Julia, I whispered to Anne-Marie,
no wonder you don't want to be friends with her anymore. She is so rude to you.
For a second, Anne-Marie didn't say anything. Then she mumbled,
yeah, sometimes,
and we separated to go to our desks.
Mr. Tompkin had left a book on my desk. He was always trying to get me to read something new.
This one had a picture of a spunky-looking girl on the cover, and some buildings behind her. I pushed the spunky girl aside, pulled my book out of my desk, and opened it randomly to see where I would land. Meg was on the planet Kamazots, where all these little boys are in front of their matching houses, bouncing their matching balls. All the balls hit the ground at exactly the same moment, every time. Then all the boys turn at the same second and go back into their identical houses, except for this one boy. He's outside all alone, and his ball rolls into the street. And then his mother comes out looking all nervous and carries him into the house. I was thinking about how much Mr. Tompkin would hate the idea of a place where all the houses looked exactly the same when something stung me hard behind the ear. I jerked my head up and saw Julia laughing silently over her book. I looked down on the floor and saw the rubber band she had shot at me, at my head. I'd thought we were just irritating each other, but I was wrong. This was war. Invisible things. The next time I saw Marcus, I was absolutely sure he would remember me. I was in the main office because Mr. Tompkin had sent me down to pick up some mimeographs.
Why you kids need diagrams of the water system is beyond me, Wheelie said as she handed them to me from her chair.
They're from Main Street, I told her. We're trying to make working hydrants.
Well, that may be the silliest thing I've ever heard, she said, waving me away.
I love the smell of new copies. Mom says I have an attraction to dangerous smells, her main example being the fact that I love to stand in a warm cloud of dry cleaner exhaust and take deep breaths. There is something very food but not food about the smell of dry cleaner exhaust. She always pulls me away and says that she's sure in 10 years will find out that it causes horrible diseases.
I was walking back toward the steps, quietly inhaling the smell of the 32 freshly copied diagrams of the New York City water system, when Marcus came out of the stairwell reading a book.
Hey, I said, but he walked right by me, past the main office, and around the corner to where the dentist's office is.
Back in class, I passed out the diagrams like Mr. Tompkin asked me to.
I accidentally ripped Julia's before I gave it to her, and accidentally crumpled it a little too.
Alice Evans was squirming in her chair like she was doing a hula dance. I rolled my eyes. No wonder she was the only sixth grader who had to bring an extra set of clothes to school.
Things you hold on to. According to Jimmy,
There's a $2 bill in circulation for every 12 $1 bills.
But people hold on to them, he said while I was putting on my jacket to go to the store.
The light bulb over the sink in the back room had burned out, and Jimmy didn't have any extras. People think $2 bills are special. That's why you don't see them around much.
Yeah, I thought, people like you.
But I kept my face blank, because I wasn't supposed to know what was in his Fred Flintstone bank.
They hate him over at the A&P, though. No space in a cash register for a $2 bill. They gotta pull out the tray and store them underneath. And they always forget they're in there. That's why you have to ask for them.
Okay, I said. I'll ask.
Anne-Marie was behind the counter with her apron on, looking happy. Some kids from school had come in, paying customers, and she was writing their names in mayonnaise on their sandwiches before pressing her perfect V-tops down onto them. Colin was next to her, doing the same. Anne-Marie gestured me over. I noticed that she was either very warm or she was wearing makeup.
I'm going to ask Jimmy if we can have meatballs for lunch, she whispered, since it's Thanksgiving tomorrow.
Great, I said, even though I didn't find those meatballs any more appealing than my usual cheese sandwich. They just sat there in the pot, day after day.
I'll be back in a minute, I told her. If anyone orders hot chocolate, tell them to wait for me.
There were no $2 bills at the A&P, and when I got back to Jimmy's with the light bulbs, the kids were gone, and Julia herself was standing in front of the sandwich counter. Anne-Marie and Colin had started making their lunches already. Jimmy had said no, I guessed, to the meatballs, because they were picking through the cheese. Julia, who was pretending I hadn't just walked in, seemed to be in the middle of a long speech about how American cheese wasn't even real cheese, strictly speaking. I saw her long fingers gesturing toward the not cheese, and I knew instantly that her V-cut would be flawless, that by Monday she would be behind that counter with Anne-Marie and Colin, and that her apron, the same kind that looked gray and baggy on everyone else, would somehow be perfect on her. She would have a way of tucking it up to fit, some trick a waiter in Paris had taught her. Then Jimmy came out from the back holding a stack of dripping plastic trays.
You, he pointed at Julia with an armful of trays. Out! I already told you once.
Julia snatched her hand back from the setup tray. Anne-Marie flushed.
We're just talking, Anne-Marie said. There's no customers here now.
Actually, I'm a customer, Julia said, crossing her arms over her chest. I came to buy a sandwich. I have money. She stuck out one pretty boot so that the green leather tip pointed at the ceiling.
Out, Jimmy said, practically growling. Now.
After she left, I pretended along with Anne-Marie that Jimmy was a little bit crazy. But as we walked back to school with our cheese and lettuce sandwiches, I carried a new warm feeling inside. Jimmy could be a grouch, but he saw right through Julia, just like I did. Salty things. On the Friday after Thanksgiving, there was no school, but Mom still had to go to work. I'd been trying hard not to think about them, but I spent a good chunk of that morning worrying about your notes. I held one in each hand and read them over and over. The part about writing a letter wasn't too scary. The scary parts were, I'm coming to save your friend's life, and, oh, by the way, where do you keep your keys? And, P.S., don't ever tell anyone about any of this. Seeing my name written out in the second note was also pretty creepy, because I was still trying to pretend the notes weren't really meant for me. And also, where you wrote, I won't be myself when I reach you. I didn't like that part at all. Come to think of it, there were a lot of scary parts. After a long time, I put the notes away and turned on the television. I'd been watching TV for 2 hours when I heard Luisa's regular knock. Potato chip drop, she said when I opened the door. She was in her uniform, holding up a plastic bag. Luisa is always bringing Mom food from the nursing home where she works,
She doesn't steal. It's leftovers from lunch. Mostly little bags of potato chips or animal cookies. The health department says that once something has been served on a tray, it has to be thrown away even if no one touched it. So Luisa takes all the little bags home and gives them to Mom, who brings them to the pregnant jailbird parenting group she runs downtown. Once a month, Mom takes the subway down to this actual jail and talks to criminal pregnant women about what to expect after they have their babies. They all think she's some kind of saint for bringing them potato chips and animal cookies. Mom says that jail is a hard place, and that it can make people hard, too.
It changes them, she told me once. Jail stops them from becoming who they might grow to be.
Isn't that the whole idea? I asked. It's supposed to stop them from being criminals.
She shook her head. That's not what I mean. A lot of people make bad mistakes, but being in jail can make them feel like a mistake is all they are, like they aren't even people anymore.
Her bringing the chips and cookies is supposed to help somehow. It's not really the cookies, she says. It's the fact that someone brings them. I took the plastic bag from Luisa. She smiled at me.
You know what? You're getting tall.
I leaned against the doorway.
You think?
She nodded. I miss you, Miranda. It was the first time either of us had said anything about the fact that I was never at her apartment anymore.
Yeah.
Her saying she missed me made me feel sort of hopeless for some reason. When she left, I lay on the couch with the TV off and my eyes closed, and I listened for Sal's basketball. Hearing it made me feel better for once. That sound was like the last thread connecting us. Mom didn't talk much at dinner that night. She was still in her work clothes, a denim skirt, and a T-shirt with a picture of a coffee cup on it and the words, "Get your own," underneath. Richard had brought strawberries over for dessert.
Darn it, Mom threw down a strawberry. SSOs again.
I bet the grapes are delicious.
I gave her a fake smile.
Don't start, Miranda. I had a lousy day.
You did? Richard's eyebrows went up. I didn't know that.
How would you know? Mom asked. You were in court all day.
It isn't much to you if the copier breaks, is it? Did anyone ask you to type 3 copies of a 16-page document?
Richard shrugged. But you're done now. It's over. Why let it wreck your whole evening?
Oh, stuff it, Mr. Perfect. Mom stomped off to her bedroom without even giving him a chance to tap his right knee. Richard looked at me.
What did the 0 say to the 8?
I rolled my eyes.
Nice belt.
He'd been telling me that one for at least a year. Later, Mom stacked the dishes in the sink, turned the faucet on, and went to change her clothes. I stood there and watched as the greasy saucepan overflowed onto the plates underneath. The oily water reflected the light and made the whole thing look like a sparkly fountain. Sometimes I can stare at something like that for a long time. Mom came back wearing sweatpants and started washing the dishes. I opened my math workbook at the kitchen table. A minute later, Richard came in and said, "Didn't I leave that extra pair of work shoes here a few months ago? I know they were in the closet, but I can't find them anywhere."
Mom's head snapped up. I knew it. I just knew it.
We had been robbed after all. Things You Pretend. The Monday after Thanksgiving, we were stuck in the school cafeteria for lunch. The naked guy was back, running down Broadway, and they wouldn't let any kids out of the building.
Kind of cold to be running around in your birthday suit,
Colin called over to us on his way to a table of boys. Anne-Marie giggled. I could see Sal over there. He glanced toward us once, but acted like he didn't see me. I watched the boys for a few seconds, all of them trying to talk louder than the other ones. Sal was doing it too. Every once in a while I could hear his voice on top. And it reminded me of this game we used to play on the crosstown bus on our way to the city pool.
Sal would be holding on to the silver bus pole, and I would grab the pole right above his hand. Then he'd move his hand so it was right above mine, and I'd put mine on top of his until we were on our tiptoes, holding on to the pole near the very top, and usually some grown-up would say to stop fooling around. Couldn't we see that the bus was crowded and one of us was going to fall and knock somebody over? Anne-Marie picked at her food. The worst part of being stuck inside for lunch was that we had to get school lunch, which was gross. I wonder if Jimmy will count the bread order himself, I said. I bet he won't. I think he just likes to make me do it. She nodded. To give you something to do. Gee, thanks. I threw my milk straw at her. Hey, I didn't mean... Sure you didn't. Then her smile faded. She was still looking at me, but something had changed, like a switch had been flicked inside her. Like she was still there, but was doing something else in her head. Anne-Marie? Don't. Julia was standing behind me with a carton of milk in her hand. Before I could say anything, she slid onto the bench next to me, still looking right at Anne-Marie. She'll be fine in a minute. What's wrong with her? Just wait. Julia hadn't even glanced at me. Her eyes never left Anne-Marie's face. Anne-Marie moved her head a little. She put her arm down on the table, blinked, and said, What? As if she'd maybe missed something I'd just said. Are you okay? I asked. Julia hit my knee with hers under the table. Don't ask her questions, she hissed. Anne-Marie noticed her just then. Hi, Julia, she said, and a smile came over her face. Julia smiled back. Hi. Then she turned to me. So, Miranda, how's the playground going? From Main Street, I mean. She wanted to talk about Main Street? Now? Her eyes held mine. I heard your proposal was approved. Congratulations. Congratulations? Thanks. Will there be swings? How are you going to make them? It was dawning on me that Julia was showing me something, teaching me how to help Anne-Marie. Paperclips, I told Julia. I'm using paperclips to make the chains for the swings, and I'm going to cut pieces of rubber tire for the seats. Julia was nodding. That sounds great, she said. I could almost imagine us being friends, having this conversation for real. What else? She asked. What? She looked annoyed. I wasn't catching on fast enough. For the playground, what else? Oh, well, seesaws? Definitely seesaws. Then Anne-Marie spoke. You know, balsa wood would be perfect for the seesaws. It's really easy to cut. I think my dad might even have some. Really? I said. That would be great. We could paint them orange, just like the ones in Riverside Park. Yes, Anne-Marie said. We can start them at my house, maybe even today if you want. She looked at Julia. Want to come and start Miranda's seesaws? Before Julia could answer, I said, There's no rush. I just got the plans approved. We can start next week. Anyway, Anne-Marie, you were coming to my house today, remember? I felt Julia pulling away. See you guys, she said, and stood up. Bye, I said. Anne-Marie looked up at her. Bye, Julia. A few minutes later, the PA system crackled to life, and Anne-Marie was called to the nurse's office. Anne-Marie shrugged, smiled, and walked away, saying, See you in a minute. But she didn't come back. Things that crack. Outside our classroom, Julia waited for me with her hands on her hips. God, you're an idiot. You're an idiot. You know that? I'm an idiot. She's been eating all that bread at that stupid job you got her. She's not supposed to eat any of that stuff, idiot. I didn't get her the stupid... I don't even know what you're talking about. It's her epilepsy, idiot. You total idiot. Her dad has her on this special diet. He makes her special food. She's not supposed to eat bread or drink soda. She's not? No, she's not, idiot. And by the way, what's your problem with me anyway? I'd really like to know.
What? Your problem? With me? What is it?
Besides the fact that you've called me an idiot 6 times in the last minute? Besides the fact that you shot a rubber band at my head?
She waved all that away as if I had mentioned some silly detail.
I'm talking about way before that. You've hated me forever. You've been giving me dirty looks since, like, the 3rd grade. Are you going to pretend you haven't?
I stared at her. Some feeling had started in my stomach and was traveling up to my face.
And I knew that when it got there, I would turn bright red and hear the ocean, which is what happens when I get put on the spot. If I don't cry, I turn red and hear the ocean. It's a lose-lose situation.
What are you talking about?
I said.
I have no idea, she said. I really don't.
But a person knows when someone hates her. At least I do.
She flung her arm down and her little silver watch flew off her wrist and hit the floor with a crack.
A very sharp, final-sounding sort of crack.
Her precious watch. I'm not proud of this now, but that sound, which echoed in the tiled hallway, made me really happy.
I sucked my bottom lip so that I wouldn't smile.
Julia bent down to pick up the watch.
I thought she would start to screech, but she just flipped it over in her hand and looked at it. A web of tiny cracks covered the face like a cobweb.
Oh, great.
She puffed out her cheeks and exhaled slowly.
This whole day just stinks, she said, and she walked away. On the way home, I found myself walking half a block behind Sal again.
I'd learned not to run and catch up to him. He would only look at his sneakers and not talk.
So I watched him bobbing along in his navy blue knit hat, his head going from side to side a little, like it always does when he walks. I think he thought that hat looked tough the way he had it pulled down to his eyebrows.
Then Marcus came out of his dented front door next to the garage, wearing that green army coat he always wore. He started walking down the block, towards Sal. Even half a block behind him, I could see Sal's body hunch and slow down.
I knew what he was doing. He was looking for a way out.
Should he pretend he needed to cross the street all of a sudden? That he had just remembered something he needed to buy at Bell's? But it was a little late for that. Marcus was almost in front of him.
I could have called out to Sal at that moment. It would have been easy. He would have had an excuse to turn around and start walking away from Marcus. And then Marcus might have stopped to talk to me for a minute, and Sal would have seen that it was all okay. He could have dropped his fear of Marcus right then and there. I've thought about this a lot, because I realize it would have changed everything that happened later.
Instead, I watched.
And what Sal did was squat down and pretend to tie his shoe. It was a plea for mercy. Dropping to tie your shoe was an I can't fight, I can't run, I bow down before you sort of a move.
Plus, just in case some hitting did occur, it protected important body parts.
I kept walking while Sal crouched there on the sidewalk and Marcus walked right by without even noticing him.
And then Marcus walked right by me.
Things Left Behind.
Guess what? Anne-Marie said when I called her at home that night to see if she was okay.
Someone left a rose on our doormat.
For you?
I don't know. Maybe.
Of course it was for her. Who else would it be for? Was there anything with it? A card?
No, just the rose.
Her voice sounded all thin and excited.
Weird, huh? I wonder.
Hey, can I ask you something? Are you not supposed to eat bread? She was quiet.
It's not a big deal. Just that Julia said,
no, she interrupted.
It is sort of a big deal. I should have told you. I have epilepsy.
Oh.
And I'm not supposed to eat bread or starches. It's this crazy diet my dad read about, but it actually works. I'm usually fine. People don't even really know I have it, because for years I've hardly had any seizures at all.
Is that what happened today?
Yeah, I sort of took a break from my diet.
It's been nice, working at Jimmy's with you guys. Eating whatever I want and not having anyone look at me funny or lecture me.
Someone had lectured her, though. Julia had.
You can still work at Jimmy's, I said. Just don't eat his crummy food.
She laughed. I know. Actually,